Welcome, and thank you for joining the J to the Third podcast, featuring 30-year PGA professional Joey Hickman. This show will highlight golfers from Tennessee and beyond with stories of faith, fairways, and philosophies of teaching and coaching, both golf and life. You will be challenged, entertained, and encouraged by the guests on today's show. J to the Third stands for a lot of Jesus, a lot of joy, and a little bit of Joey. And now, let's welcome our host, Joey Hickman.
Hey, welcome to J to the Third podcast. I hope you had a wonderful Easter celebration. What a time of year for Christians, right? I know we certainly did, starting off with the Chris Tomlin concert on Friday night at Bridgestone Arena. It was quite incredible. My guest on the show today will be Reese Kelly. Reese and I go way back. He was an assistant professional that used to work for me at Old Hickory Country Club 10 or 12 years ago, and we developed a lifelong relationship, and we've seen things come full circle. Reese is going to share his story with you today. I hope you are encouraged and challenged to live a life pleasing and acceptable to our Lord and Savior. I do want to pause for just a minute before we go any further and ask you if you would to subscribe to the channel. Tell your friends about it. Share it on your social media platforms. Allow people to hear the stories that you're getting to hear, and that'll help us to grow. I also want you to leave us a review. Help us know what we can do to make things a little bit better, a little bit more clear, and maybe get the message out to more and more folks. I'm thankful for you. Thanks for coming and joining us today. Hope you enjoy the show. But first, a word from our sponsor. Today's show is being brought to you by Steve Kirkpatrick and Kirkpatrick Golf. Kirkpatrick Golf is a full-service golf shop located in Nashville, Tennessee. More appropriately, beautiful downtown Donelson, Tennessee. It is owned and operated by PGA professional Steve Kirkpatrick, a close friend. Steve has been working in the golf equipment business since 1986. He offers instruction, custom club fitting utilizing the Ping fitting system with irons and woods, any type of club repair, anything that you need done, Steve can do it. And you know what? If you drop something off to get it re-gripped, he's going to have same-day service. And if you drop something off that needs to be reshafted, if he's got the shaft in stock, he will take care of it that day for you. He's that type of person. When's the last time you've heard something like that? That's refreshing. Thank you, Steve. Go by and see my friend Steve at Kirkpatrick Golf, located at 2547 Lebanon Pike, Nashville, Tennessee. Phone number 615-760-5810. Welcome to the show, Reese Kelly, former assistant golf professional at Old Hickory Country Club and some other venues along the way. Welcome to J to the Third podcast.
Thanks, bro.
So let's kind of dive right in. Tell me your connection to golf. Obviously, former golf pro Reese. I mean, that's pretty easy to figure out. But tell me your connection to golf and how you stay connected with golf to this day, although you're not working behind a counter slaving like an assistant pro anymore.
Yeah. So I got started with the game through my grandfather, and it was something that we just did on Sunday afternoons to just kind of get away. I played other sports, and I played basketball and baseball. And actually, when I was about 14 or 15, I got hurt, and it kind of took some skills away from baseball, and tried to play basketball another year and got hurt again. And they told me no more contact sports. And throughout I played high school golf. I played golf recreationally. And then at about 16 or 17, I kind of dove in head first and walked on to the University of Tennessee at Martin, had a fairly successful career there. And after that, I wanted to pursue professional golf, and worked at some country clubs along the way, worked with you for about 5 years, and was going to try to play professionally, and then decided to have a family And then got out of the business completely. But golf to me, the connection for me was it was actually a healing mechanism for me. My best friend passed away when I was 17 from cancer, and the first place I went to was the driving range. I turned my headlights on and I hit balls till my hands almost bled. And it was kind of cathartic and therapeutic to me. So anytime I get overwhelmed or just need some time, the golf course is where I go.
And that's wow. I don't remember you sharing that with me. I'm sure you did, but I don't remember that part of the story. But man, that's got to be tough losing your best friend at that age.
It was very tough. I still have some healing around that to this day. And anytime I come to that side of town, I go visit him, whether I'm going to play golf at Old Hickory or going to visit family or whatever. It was tough, but I kind of my drive behind playing was kind of in his memory, because he was, I mean, he was an unbelievable guy. He, 35 on the ACT, baseball, golf. He was just incredible. And in fifth grade, he was diagnosed and was unable to compete the way he would like to because of a surgery. And but he was a member of our state championship team in high school in 2001. He was a reserve, but he was, and that we won that title not even 3 weeks before he passed.
Wow. Wow. And you, man, you had an escape. That's what golf was.
It was.
That's incredible. I get it. Everybody needs an outlet that goes through a loss like that. I never, outside of losing my parents, I never lost anybody that was so close to me until my daughter passed away 2 years and a couple months ago. And I need to go back to everybody that I ever counseled prior to that and apologize because I didn't know what to say. And to this day, I don't know that I still know what to say, but I know the feeling. And sometimes it's best just to not say anything. It's being there with them. It's being a friend. Sometimes it's banging balls. Sometimes it's taking a drive and not saying a word, just something that keeps your mind busy that allows you to work through the loss of something like that, because it's just not an easy thing that we're designed to do.
It's not. And, being 17 years old, I really didn't have the capacity or never felt like I had the support system to deal with that loss. And as I've grown and, I still, as I mentioned, I still am trying to work through that because I had a, I had a dream to make it in professional golf and then set up a foundation for pediatric cancer. And I mean, there's still time, but that was a kind of a dream of mine and in his memory, because I mean he was such a profound, I mean he was such a smart guy and very inspiring. And I mean we met in kindergarten and were basically inseparable till he passed in November of 2001.
Wow. Well, I'm sorry about that, but I know it's a driving force in your life, and don't give up on the dream. We're coming up on the 18th year of the Shelby Golf Tournament, which means I was about 43, 44 years old when we had the first one. So you're not there yet. You're getting close. You're not there yet. So just keep pushing on.
Yeah.
Keep pushing on. So I want to go back for just a minute. You talked about a couple of things in there. You won a state championship with Good Pasture Christian School in high school. You guys were a dominant force, and then you you decided to walk on at UT Martin. So let's touch on those for a minute. Tell me what it felt like about winning the state championship, what that meant to you. I know obviously a couple of weeks later, it was diminished somewhat. And then walking on at UT Martin, what helped you make that decision? I look, that's my alma mater. I love that place, and I'm glad you decided to go there. But let's dive into that a little bit.
Well, the previous year in 2000, we came up a couple of shots short in the state championship to a team that had, I believe, three or four Division I golfers out of East Tennessee. I think a couple of them went to Tech, and I can't remember where the other one went to. That was a real driving force. We had a good core. I was the only senior that was in the lineup, but we had some younger kids. Brandon Burris is one of them, so had to kind of wrangle that personality, and I kind of took him under a wing. And we actually played a lot of golf at Old Hickory that fall, he pushed me to be a better player, and playing against people that were better than me. We were pretty dominant. We went undefeated. I think the closest match we had, I think we won, it was like 4 or 5 strokes. So we ended up winning the state title by a decent margin. And then I kind of shopped around. I went up to Austin Peay to visit. I really didn't have a junior record to speak of, because I just didn't really have the means at that time, from a family perspective, to do junior golf, and it wasn't as prevalent, as it is now with all the tours and everything. And visited Austin Peay. Basically, the coach there told me I wasn't good enough to play Division I golf. And basically the reason I went to UT Martin was my best friend in high school had committed to be a cheerleader there. And she was like, "You'll love it. It's a gorgeous campus." And I decided, because they gave me the most academic money, and I showed up on campus. I had never seen it before freshman orientation. Well, I went to summer for a couple of days and did some testing, but that was the first time I'd ever seen it. I went to UT Martin sight unseen. And the first week, when we were in freshman orientation, I went to the golf coach's office. It was a brand new golf coach. He's now since retired, Jerry Carpenter. He's done some amazing things there, but I was his first. He had brought in a couple of guys that I'm still close to today, and I said, "I want to walk on to the golf team." And he looked at me square in the eyes. He said, "Son, the basketball office is down the hall." And I said, "No, I want to try out for golf." And he said, "Okay, here's where to be." And I was fortunate during my freshman orientation. My advisor was a big golf fan and big golfer in the community. He was a history teacher, and he let me go when everybody else had to stay because I was preparing for a club championship. And he told me where to hit balls, and he would let me go a couple hours early to go prepare for that. And came back, won the club championship, and then went back and ended up finishing qualifying third. And I signed, and it still gets me to this day. I signed all the NCAA paperwork in my dorm room by myself. And I cried because all the work from a fitness perspective to pounding balls to everything. I mean, that was one of my dreams come true. And
That's
it was really cool.
awesome. That's awesome.
And
That's a great story. I'd share with everybody why the golf coach would tell you the basketball office was down the hall.
well, I'm 6'7". So he looked at me and he said, "Son, the basketball office is down the hall." I said, "Well, I got a couple of knee injuries, so I want to play golf." And He was a great force in my life, and I think I played all but one or two events my freshman year, and then got put on scholarship my second year, and they essentially paid me to go to school and play golf for them. So it was my time at Martin was fantastic. And since I've left, they've done some amazing things and got a brand new practice facility and won some OVC titles. So felt like my class kind of started laying the groundwork for all that, because we were a bottom feeder. My freshman year, we were not very good as a team. And then, I mean, I think I had a top, I think me and a teammate had a top 10 in the conference championships a couple of years, and went from bottom feeder to kind of middle to upper tier, and then they kind of progressed as we as we got out of school. I kept up with everybody, and so a teammate of mine is still like a volunteer assistant. And then, the last couple of years, I've actually been going back to a tournament at Fulton, Kentucky, a little invitational to go support them, because they supported us when we practiced. That was one of the courses we practiced at. So I go back every year for the Ken 10 Invitational and rekindle some friendships with some teammates.
Yeah, that's an awesome area. Shout out to Coach Carpenter for that decision to sign you. He's a wonderful man. He's a wonderful friend, and they've definitely done some miraculous things in Martin, Tennessee, with that facility. I was just up there a couple of weeks ago working with the team with TrackMan and showing them all the functions of putting and chipping and different games you can play on it. And that practice facility is incredible. Just sidebar, I think that was started my first year at Martin in the fall of 1983, when a freshman named Bill Rhodes came and left his mark on UT Martin, became an All-American, and later funded half of that building and that facility to be built, the Bill Rhodes Golf Center. I don't know of any other school in the OVC that has a facility similar. I don't know many schools in Division One that have something set up quite as unique as they do, and it's phenomenal, and it's in rural Northwest Tennessee.
Yeah, and they have the turf management program take care of the grounds, and I know Coach Carpenter goes out there and picks balls and mows greens and all that, because he was doing that for I don't know what it's called now, but we called it Sharon, the golf course in Sharon. He would always cut greens, and they let us come out there. And I think they're the only one in the OVC that has that state of the art type facility.
It's phenomenal. We did some work. Of course, it was 52 degrees, so we had to do a little bit of work indoors. But that putting green that they have, the first time I went up there, the putting green rolled about an 8. This one now is set at about 13. And we did some work on the TrackMan there on the putting green, and it was absolutely phenomenal. Just to think that's in Martin, Tennessee. Now, other things that have changed: Sharon Country Club, Weakley County Country Club is now Persimmon Hills. They have 18 holes. Went back up there and played a fundraiser in August, and that was the first time I played the new nine. That's about 20 something years old, or 30 something years old now. I don't know. When I was at school, it was 41 years ago. So that's dating me a little bit. Great memories to have. Man, just incredible that that's in Martin, Tennessee.
It
Grateful
is.
and thankful. Grateful and thankful that you got to experience that. I know there's some bonds there on the team that it's hard to explain this to people that don't play team sports. And golf really is an individual sport that is added up to become a team. But the bonds that you make with your teammates, your roommates, your suite mates, those people that you live with, those people that you eat with, those people that you practice with, those things will go with you throughout your life. I keep up with most everybody from Tennessee that was on that UT Martin team 41 years ago. good friends. Some we have reconnected later in life, but they will go with you for a long time, and that's pretty incredible.
Well, we went from traveling in a Astro van, five guys, five golf clubs, and five duffel bags. Well, six duffel bags, including coach. To by the time that we were in my, you know, junior and senior year, we were traveling a 15 passenger with a trailer with, you know, where we could tie our clubs up and they wouldn't rattle around. And, you know, we finally got to spread out. So we always played for the back seat where you could stretch out. So that was a little bit of incentive to try to play well.
Very important with a guy whose head touches the roof of all vans that they get into, that you're able to lay down and stretch out.
Pretty much.
Well, look, we had a 15 passenger van. We would throw all our clubs in the back of the van, and you know, guys would lay out and crawl out everywhere. If Coach Page didn't like something that we said or were doing, he might tap the brakes a little hard and throw us in the floor. So, you know, things were different back in the 80s than they were in the early 2000s, for sure. For sure. So let's this is a faith, fairways, and philosophies of teaching and coaching podcast. Let's talk a little bit about faith. Tell me about your faith experience, Reese. I know up close and personal that some things have happened that have shined a light on your belief system and on your faith. Share with us about that.
Yeah. So I grew up in church. I went to a Church of Christ school. And then about the time my friend passed away, I got very angry with God, and some things happened, unfortunately, in Martin, where I probably took it as a slight, because we weren't available to come to the college night or whatever. So I stayed out of the church for a long time. And I was actually working at Old Hickory, and, you know, saw your faith was very strong, but a member kind of challenged me, John Downs, he just kept bugging me to come to his church. And I was going through some personal issues, and I said, okay. And I finally ended up going with him. And I just shared this with him because I was on a trip with him last week. We were playing golf at Old Hickory about a week ago. And then from starting to go back to church with him and my relationship with him, he actually prayed over me about 80 yards out on number four. Wow. And that is when I gave my life to Christ. And, you know, so that place kind of shares a special place in my heart, and hopefully is. And then I kind of got away from the church, and my higher power was my ex-wife, and then trying to have kids and trying to chase the things and all that. And you know, got into some depression and alcohol use and alcoholism. And, you know, about 2.5 years ago, I think it was November of 2021, I instead of praying over certain things, I was praying for God to just not let me wake up. I was that low, and actually had planned to take my life, and for some reason I couldn't pull the trigger. I don't know why. Divine intervention, maybe. And then I remember it was November 26th of 21. I was in a hotel because my wife had asked me to leave the house due to alcohol use, and I was just beaten. Alcohol had beat me into submission, and I got down on my knees, and I prayed that I said, God, just take this from me. And November 27th was my first day without a drink, and still on that journey. And then it the stopping didn't save my marriage, which ended up probably being a blessing, but through a lot of pain and pounding, because it doesn't say if you experience troubles in this world, it says when.
When.
And you're supposed to take joy in the troubles of this world in the book of James, and which is one of the, in AA, before they had the big book and everything, they studied 1 Corinthians 13, Sermon on the Mount, the book of James. That's what all the writings are based on. And I was fortunate to find some gentlemen on this platform, Zoom, that they preach that, and didn't save my marriage. I'm now divorced. I had a really cool moment last summer. I had gotten baptized with my ex-wife and my children, but ended up some things happened. Some of the things that I pinned to the cross were used against me in divorce proceedings. So they were kind of that felt kind of tainted to me. So I was actually at a men's retreat with all these gentlemen on Zoom, and a guy that I had listened to numerous times, conversed with via Zoom, they opened the pool up for baptism, and I said I wanted to do it, and he knew very little to nothing about my situation. And when I was in the water with him, he just says, "She holds no power over you anymore." Right before he put me in the water, and coming out, there was a weight lifted. And then the next morning, I was doing some prayer and meditation, and there was a cross there, and I don't know. I stopped and I knelt at that cross, and I heard a voice, and it said, "She doesn't define you, I do."
Wow.
And I mean, just incredibly, incredibly powerful. So, my feeling today is I'm sober and recovered by the grace of God. And I mean, addictions or anything else is, it's that conscious separation from God. But being sober-minded and following Christ is that conscious connection with God. So that is kind of my faith journey and kind of what I hold to to this day.
I want to say right off the bat how proud I am of you and for you. We met several times during all this with your ex-wife, counseling, meeting, talking, encouraging. And I saw that glimmer in your eye, Reese, and it's the same glimmer I had the day that I got sober. I knew that was not for me, and you will always remember that day. I drove a stake in the ground March 26 of 1989. You did the same thing on your day. You will always look back on that, and you will be forever thankful that God reached down and touched you in the way that He did. And for the people listening, please understand, just because you come to Christ doesn't mean everything's going to go away and going to go your way. I mean, you've heard Reese's testimony that it didn't save his marriage. He's not able to be in the same house with his three precious little girls, and those are things that people sometimes get sold a wrong bill of goods, Reese. And thanks for being so open and honest about this. That sometimes it doesn't go the way that we hope it goes or ends. I know when you quit drinking, you thought it would save your marriage, and it didn't. But man, I'm so proud of the man that you are. I'm so proud of the man that you're becoming. I saw this in you a long time ago, that you have much to gain and much to give for the kingdom. And I'm thankful for that. I hate you have to go through this. My heart aches for you. But in the same token, my heart is rejoicing in the fact that you know who defines you, you know whose you are. And I'm grateful for that. That's a wonderful testimony.
I am too.
Powerful.
And
Powerful.
I without the getting sober and Christ helping me get rid of the urge to drink or use or anything. I mean, I wouldn't have 50% custody of my girls. It just doesn't happen in this county. And I was, it's funny how God places people in your life at the right times, and met some incredible people that have helped me through this situation. And whether it be counselors or attorneys or friends or anything, even the woman I'm dating now. I mean, I it's not a It's not a coincidence that we met. We met in AA, and so, we didn't see ourselves at the highest. I mean, it was we've seen each other's lows, and I don't think that would have come if I wasn't working on myself and in a place to be able to receive that.
Yeah, that's great. And I meant to do this earlier, but I got caught up in emotion listening to your story. Shout out to John Downs. Folks, most of the people that wind up going to church, they tell the same reason why they are there. They're there because somebody invited them. And John just didn't invite you one time. He kept on and on and on and on until you went. I know his heart. I know how much he loves you, and shout out to John. That's incredible. More people need to be willing to step out on their own faith and invite that friend that just needs an encounter with Jesus. And man, that's the way the church gets filled, you know?
Well,
That's
and the first time I went, he was on pastoral duty. So, he's a former police officer, SWAT team member, or whatever. So he would walk in with the pastor, and I didn't know this the first time, but we were like second row. And so it wasn't like sneaking in the back and like I mean, I was like second row. And no, the pastor there is just an incredible speaker, Jim Freeze at Joy Church. I bounce it around to there, and then I go to Church of the City Franklin, and my kids when they're with me, well, we'll go there some, and then so I don't know. I feel like maybe God's leading me to another place as well. So we'll see about that.
Well, he just listen to his voice. He won't steer you wrong at all. That's awesome. Look, tell me about those three precious girls. Tell me their names, their ages, and what all they're into.
Oh yeah. So I have Emery, who is 9, Caroline, who is 7, and Collins, aka Coco, it will be 4 in just over a month. And so they are into, we do dance and we do soccer, and Emery's, I help coach Emery's soccer team, and so we're kind of into that. And but they, they like all the things that little girls do. They love dance, they love gymnastics, they love being around both their mom and dad. So, I'm very, very blessed to be able to be a part of their lives, and be present. And that's the most important thing, is be present
Yeah.
for a part of their lives. Because my oldest asked me, she was like, "Daddy, why don't you drink wine anymore?" And this was just random at dinner, not spurred on. said, "Well, I can't be the best dad that I want to be, and I just don't like the way it makes me feel." She was like, "Okay, good. I like it better this way too." So,
That's awesome.
out of the mouth of babes, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Way to go, Emery. Keep
Yeah.
that up. Keep that up. All right. So we've touched on all things Reese. I want to throw you a curveball. If you could go back and have a conversation with 18-year-old Reese, knowing what you know now, what would you tell him and why?
First one is don't drink. I didn't drink till I was 18. It created immensely it I thought it was my solution, and it is a symptom of a bigger problem. And I would also go back and say, be able to accept help from people that want to help you. Because I'm a very stubborn individual and didn't know I needed help, whether that be mental health or grieving or anything like that. But it's opened an entire world to me that I never thought possible. Whether that be counseling, whether that be AA meetings, whether that be counsel of trusted friends. My social circle has definitely shrunk since everything went down. But you kind of find out who your true friends are when you're going through tough situations.
That's good. That's deep. I don't know that I would change anything in my life that happened, and I had some very dark things that happened because God used those things to sharpen me and to refine me, to show me my need for Him. And I think I hear the same thing in your voice that, I would have been smarter had I not drank. Obviously, I'd like to go back and tell my younger self, man, don't do it. Just don't do it. But I look back and I see God's hand in all things that that's what gives me the drive and the determination now to not drink and to tell people why I don't. I mean, it's there's no secret that there are people that socially drink and can handle stopping at one or two. I was not one of those individuals. I think that was part of my issue at UT Martin. I couldn't stop it, just a drink. And man, there's a lot of things that can happen if you allow that drink to turn into a bunch. But
Well, just to add, I mean, it doesn't have to be the drink. I think that a lot of people in the world today, it can be, man, it can be social media, it can be money, it can be food, it can be anything. I mean, like I have the same guilt and remorse sometimes when I'm eating really clean and working out, and I'm just tired, and then like I'm emotional, and then like I'll go get Arby's, and then I feel the same guilt and remorse that I did then when I had a drink. And then I go on a bender of like, oh, I'm eating Taco Bell and McDonald's and Arby's, and it just kind of snowballs on me. So I mean, it what it shows me is I'm kind of powerless over those things. And then the one thing that I mean, in AA it says, because we lack the power, and there's only one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. And it, everything can become a higher power, but it's not the highest power.
Exactly. We got a little invisible being on our shoulder whispering lies into our ears, and we have to decide whether we're going to believe those or not. And look, we've touched on everybody. We've stepped on everybody's toes today. The social drinkers, the overeaters. We've even touched on golf. Golf can become your higher power. things that you do that take number one. And that's what this is all about. It's about our relationship with the Father, and are we holding ourselves accountable to maintain that relationship and grow? I'm 61. I'm still learning. I read every day. I study every day His Word. I'm still learning things and relearning things that I've been gleaning for the last 30 plus years. When you stop learning, you stop living. Golf is the same way, Reese. You know that as well as I do. You're always tinkering. You're always trying to work on something. And I want to brag about golf for just a minute. This is not a God brag. This is a golf brag. I've been doing this stack system training, and my speed is not what I would like for it to be, obviously. So I'm doing something to try to help get some of that distance monster back, and I made a swing the other day. Now, this is maximum effort. This is not hitting the golf ball. This is swinging the club as fast as you possibly can swing it. You may fall down when you do it. You swing so fast. But I hit 106 miles per hour. And
There you
I
go.
look, I'm a guy that's been swinging 96, 97, 98 for the last 10 years. And yesterday I hit some balls. I've got a TrackMan simulator. My pupil didn't show up for his lesson, so I took the time to do some work, and I worked through my bag, and I got up to my driver, and I said, "Well, here's the moment of truth. Let's see what we can do. Are we going to swing 96 again?" And I sat there and I put a good pop on it. I looked down, it was 99.7. I said, "Hey, this is good." And after about four or five swings, I was touching 101, 101.5. I just, again, if you don't hit the ball in the center of the club face, it doesn't matter how hard you swing at it, it's not going to go where you want it to go. But just knowing that that potential is there. And look, this is after back surgery 2 years ago,
Yeah.
so I'm pretty excited about that. But I do see a foray into speed training and the benefits behind it. I think we can get a little too self-conscious about the speed part of it. I mean, people like yourself that are gifted with speed and hit the ball a long way don't understand what us guys that are hitting at 250 and 260 feel like when we're on a par five and there's no chance in us getting home in two, and you guys are hitting a 6 iron into the green. So that's kind of why we do it. I think you can do it, overdo it. You can do it to an extreme like DeChambeau did. I think it has defined who he has become on the golf course, and I think now I've heard him talking about trying to dial it back and get back to playing the game.
Yeah.
If it comes down to a philosophy of coaching, what I would tell somebody is if that becomes your God, if that becomes your main thing, it's only one aspect of the game, and the process of the playing. And my practice session yesterday, which was 85 balls. When's the last time you've heard me say I hit 85 balls? 30 of them were with a lob wedge, working on spin, working on angle of attack, and working on trying to throw that 25, 30 yard spinner in there and get it to sit still.
Yep.
That's an art that I think we can't lose sight of. That I see so many people getting a large bucket of balls and going making 80 swings with their driver. You on a good day, you're going to hit it 10 to 14 times on a golf course.
I
Just
mean,
play smart.
probably 85% of my practice now is wedges. And I don't have a TrackMan, but I have a little Mevo that I put behind the ball, and I put a headphone in, and I'll take different wedges out, and it just spits me, that real time information of how far that one carried, what did that feel like. And I mean, I bet I make 15 or 20 full swings in a practice session
That's you're talking my
because
language.
I mean I still see the same teacher, and I mean it's the same thing with me, and he's like, we need to just for you to play well, it's just your wedges, like all day.
Yeah, good. That's a philosophy that I think defines the game to a T. You know, most of my students would benefit if they spent more time on a putting green. We have middle school practice this afternoon, and guess what we're going to work on? We're spending an hour and 15 minutes on those lag putts and playing tic-tac-toe on the putting green.
There you go.
We have to get better at turning those 48s into 40s and 41s just by taking, you know, I'm looking at scorecards where I've got 24, 25, 26 putts for 9 holes. And this is middle school. I mean, you're not going to get these middle schoolers to one putt half the greens that they play, but my gosh, if they could one putt three or four and two putt the rest, you know, we take a high 40 score and put it low 40s. And all of a sudden, they're not hitting the ball any better, but their confidence is through the roof.
Yeah.
And you know, we can compete a little bit better. So we're gonna spend a lot of time on the putting green today. Hey,
Well,
last
Joey,
question.
I was going to say last week, I mean, picture this. I shot 71 and had 35 putts. How about
Boom.
that?
Boom. Maybe you need to come putt with us today.
I probably do. I probably do. I was ready to like jump in a pond or something.
Look, I'm one of these guys. I go out and play. I feel like Mardi Gras sometimes. I might go out and hit six greens, and somebody asked me how I played, and I said, "Man, I played awful." And they said, "What'd you shoot?" "Well, I shot 69." "Well, how in the world?" "Well, every bounce that I possibly could get to go right went right. Every 10 footer that I had for par, I made." You know, you can't rely on that when you're playing in a tournament, when your nerves are a little bit tighter and all those things don't work out as well. You have to hit the ball with some semblance of credibility. And you're 71 with 35 putts. You can take that to a tournament. My 69 with six greens hit, you can't take to a tournament. You know, so that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Last question I want to ask you, Reese, and this is a loaded question. Where do you see God at work, either in your life or in the world? Where do you see him at work right now?
For me, I see it daily, in kind of in the joy of in the gift of sobriety. I kind of see the joy in everything. I see him, I mean, even in my work life, even if it's something bad, I'm just like, thank you, God, or something good. Thank you, God. And it's kind of an attitude of gratitude that I've had to start to accept. And in the world, I've because I'm an avid sports fan, I've seen a lot more, and it's not even the number one golfer in the world. I mean, just like, hey, golf tournaments don't define me. I have a person that defines me, and man, that makes me the biggest fan of Scottie Scheffler on the face of the planet.
Yeah, amen.
And I mean, it's not conventional, but I mean, he's the best. I mean, best ball striker in the world. And you know what? If he wins a golf tournament, great. If he doesn't, he knows who he is, and he knows where.
Yeah.
What his life is rooted in, which is just so cool that he's able to speak on his faith and able, because you're not, that's not cool in this day and age. But to see somebody like that, that's a high profile person, to be able to step out, I think is just fantastic.
Yeah, I agree with that. Knowing what I know about some of those guys on tour, Aaron Baddeley, Scott Stallings, Peter Malnati, others that are big time promoters of our Lord and Savior on tour. Man, I know how hard it is out there to live that kind of lifestyle. To put yourself out there like that. And I think the Lord is using this to make his name known in in areas that maybe haven't been known much lately. I think we need more of that. So many of our sports, it's all about me, 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 me. And you see somebody like Scotty or Malnati get up and just give God all the glory. And man, I'm excited. And have the number one player in the world to say that's not what defines me. What defines me is my relationship with Christ. That's bold. I can get behind that. And I'm a huge Scottie Scheffler fan.
Yeah.
I don't think he's the next Tiger Woods. I think he is the first Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah.
I'm excited. I'm excited for him, just to see the struggles that he's had and how he's come through that. Man, that's pretty cool. One more thing. I want to get your take on what's going on in the golf world right now. I'm not saying anti-LIV or anti-PGA Tour, but what are your thoughts about these two entities and how we can come together and make golf a better game because of this?
I have a little bit of a different stance. Me as a golf fan, I want to see all the best players play together. So I want to see Rahm going against Scheffler and all that. And I mean, some guys that have defected to live, do I blame them to set up generational wealth for their families? Not really. I mean, I know the thing with the where the money's coming from, but I mean they're pretty much in everything. And I don't know how it needs to come together, but I know it needs to come together because the PGA Tour product is suffering, I think. And I mean, I can't watch live, but I mean, that's a more production issue. I don't know about that. So, I don't know how they get it done, but I think the powers that be like need to get it done just to have the best players in the world in the same tournaments.
I agree with that. Well said. I think there has to be a meeting point, and maybe things change the way that they have always been for the last, I don't know, the last 30 or 40 years. The PGA Tour has been pretty much the same. The money stalled there for a while. When I played in Memphis in 06, the purse was 5.2 million, and 10 years later, I think the purse was 5.9 million. And now Memphis is a point event. It's a playoff event, and it's
$20 million. Yeah.
$25 million for 60 players or 75 players or whatever it is. Anyway, the money has definitely changed because of LIV's influence. And I would love to see them come together so that Brooks Koepka and Jon Rahm and Bryson DeChambeau can go head to head with Scottie Scheffler and Tiger Woods and Ricky Fowler and Justin Thomas. I think the best players in the world deserve to be against one another. And for the longest time, the DP World Tour and the PGA Tour operated kind of on a partnership basis. As long as you played 15 tour events, you were considered a full-time PGA Tour member or DP World Tour member, and you could step into one another's tours and play events. We've got to figure out a way where we can make something like that happen. And I don't have the answer, but I do think we need to have a meeting of the minds. And do people want to play less and make more? Look, buddy, there's not a person in this world that wouldn't want to make more money and work less.
Yeah.
That's part of this work-life balance thing in the PGA of America now. That we've been losing associates for so long because we work them into the ground, and they want to go find something else. And now I think it's great that a guy can come in and kind of set his boundaries. Hey, I want Sunday mornings off. I want at least 2 days off a week. I'm going to give you my very best those other 5 days. I will do anything that you ask me to do, but I've got to have a little bit of balance in this, that I'm not working those 75-hour work weeks and forget my children's names or birthdays or miss games or whatever. You know, there has to be a defining line in there somewhere. So
Yeah,
who knows?
I will
Maybe
say
we're saying that.
one of the good things that the PGA Tour has done. I was reading an article that they have, you know, for the guys that are not mediocre, because to be on the PGA Tour, you're an exceptional player. But the guys that aren't, you know, that have to worry about the money, I did see that they're doing like a stipend for them where they're getting like $100,000 to $150,000 a year to travel and take care of family expenses and things like that. So I think the influence on from Liv kind of bleeding over into the your journeyman tour pro, I think that's helped them and maybe free them up, and why you're seeing maybe more long shots coming to the forefront, because they're not worried about, you know, hey, if I miss this shot, I'm not gonna be able to pay the light bill next week type thing.
Right. Yeah, I think one of the big things that the tour always had, I think, if you didn't play well, you quote unquote you weren't paid, you didn't make a check that week. Although we both know that there's sponsor dollars and there's monetization going on behind the scenes, that you know you're paid for those emblems on your shirt and on your hat and on your bag and the shoes you wear and the clothes you wear. So they're making a nice living, but you know, making a nice living and winning golf tournaments are two different things. And you ask most of those guys that are out there playing for a living, they want to win tournaments. They could care less about the money that was associated with it. Now, making it so that they can live comfortably, I like that. I don't, I mean, I'm not going to take a job, and if I don't perform, I don't get paid. You know, that would be awful. When my daughter was at her sickest and I was missing 85 days of work a year because I was in the hospital with a sick child, man, I wouldn't have gotten paid. And you know that's what it's like. My dad played professional baseball. He got a paycheck every week, whether he hit 200 or 350. You know, he never hit 350. I don't mean to mislead people, but you know what I'm saying. He's either having a good campaign or a bad campaign. But you know, if he's not performing, he's going to sit the bench, and you know, he's still getting that paycheck. That's the difference in our sport. Our sport is, if you don't play well, you don't get paid. And you know, I'm not saying that's the way that it should be. I'm just saying that's the way it's always been to make these guys hungry. That's why you don't see the same 150 guys year after year after year playing golf. I mean, where's Chad Campbell? Where's
Right.
JB Holmes? Where's these guys that had a hot run of 3 or 4 or 5 years, and now you can't see them anywhere on any tour? So, you know, life happens, your body changes, your game changes. But these guys that have staying power, I saw a thing the other day. Stewart Cink has made over 500 cuts. Wrap your head around that. Man, you know, our friend Harry Taylor, I think he's made 150 something cuts in his career. I mean, that's incredible. And this guy's got 500? Come on. He's been eating well, hasn't he?
And still in contention at 51, 52 years of age.
Think about the conditioning of the athlete now. I said this when I had Craig Colquitt on here a few weeks ago. Longtime punter for Tennessee and the Pittsburgh Steelers and family tree of the punters at UT. I saw a picture of Tom Brady and George Blanda when they were both 42. Now, Blanda played back in the 60s and 70s, and Brady's just retired recently. Blanda looked like he was 70 years old when he was 42, and Brady looked like he was 32 when he was 42.
No.
The conditioning, what we put into our body, how we train, how we practice, how we live, dictates how long we can play. And you look at some of these guys that are still performing. You know, Hale Irwin set the bar 20 years ago on the Champions Tour, and look what Bernhard Langer has done.
Most
Six,
definitely.
66 years old and is still a threat to win every week. And doesn't hit it as far as I do.
And
I mean,
always, I mean, with Augusta coming up, he you never know. I mean, he's snuck in there a couple of times for top tens in his 50s and maybe even 60s.
in his 60s, the dude's hitting driver forward on number one when everybody else is hitting driver 8 iron. So, again, conditioning. It's what you do with your body, what you do with your mind. If you believe you can, you can. And I don't put anything past Bernhard Langer. He's also another outspoken believer that, I'm thankful that God has allowed him to stay out there as long as he has. I mean, there's going to be some guys that are going to play long into their 60s, and maybe I want to see somebody at 70 years old win a Champions Tour event.
Yeah.
We're going to see that in our lifetime. We are going to see that, and I can't wait to see it. Don January was a freak of nature, but he didn't have the competition on the Champions Tour that they have out there now. I mean, gosh, there's guys out there now that are winning that couldn't win on the regular tour. It's
Sure.
because of their staying power. They've taken care of their bodies, their mind. Man, come on, Reese. We could stay here and talk all day, buddy. I want to affirm my love to you, and I am so thankful that you've allowed God to use you in the manner that He has, not only today on this podcast, but in your life. I wish you nothing but success and happiness. And man, hug those girls extra tight. Gosh, I hadn't seen them up close and personal in a long time. We're gonna have to remedy that.
Yeah.
Sooner rather than later. I know with their family tree, there's got to be some golf clubs in their future. We need to make that happen.
Maybe we'll see, but Pro, thanks for having me. I love you. And yeah, this was a good time.
Thanks for coming on the pod, folks. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Reese Kelly. If you need to back up and listen to some of this stuff, I want to encourage you to go back and listen to it multiple times. And don't be ashamed to share your story, because it's got a good ending. Reese, love you. Thank you.
Love you.
Have a blessed day.
All right. Thanks, bro.
Thank you for joining the J to the Third podcast today. Joey can be reached by email at ohccjsh@gmail.com. Feel free to leave comments, suggestions, questions, or inquiries about joining the show as a guest. Special thanks to the supporters and sponsors of our show.